Cheers Cast is part of the Fire and Water Network.
I got saddled with the job of breaking in a new postal employee. Yeah, so I told the supervisor to send a greenhorn down here. I could size him up.
Boy, they made you a trainer, huh? Well, that sounds like a compliment to me, Cliff.
You really are a civilian, aren't you, Sammy? It's a nightmare. Those rookies, yeah, they just get in your way. Ask you stupid questions. Throw off your whole rhythm.
Oh, God, this won't slow down the mail, will it? You want to go where everybody knows your name.
Hello and welcome back to Cheers Cast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. I'm your host, Ryan Daly, and joining me from the Right On Network is Tim, the Pod Crasher Price. Why do we say Pod Crasher? You've been doing this for so many years now. You're an established at the end of this. Welcome back, Tim.
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Ryan? It's been so long since we last talked.
It's been a while.
I do have a question for you. I've been reading up on this medical condition that I heard about recently, that when people hear a certain song, they get something called butter knees. I mean, have you run into this before yourself?
Yes, actually. I am personally familiar with this affliction, yeah.
Okay, all right. Maybe if you send me the name of the song offline when we're not recording, just so I know never to play it around you.
All right. Believe it or not, that will be actually part of our discussion for this episode, because we are on Season 7, Episode 12, Please, Mr. Postman. Written by Brian Pollock and Mert Rich, directed by James Burrows, and the original air date was Thursday, February 2nd, 1989. Cliff is assigned to train a new postal carrier named Margaret O'Keefe. Initially, Cliff chafes at the thought of a female in his beloved uniform, but his attitude changes when she shows the same dedication, borderline obsession, with the mail that he does. After the training period is over, Margaret reveals that she wants Cliff, romantically and sexually. They agree to meet at a sleazy motel, but Maggie makes the critical mistake of driving the postal vehicle there. Cliff is sure she'll be fired, but she sleeps with him to convince him to lie and cover her mistake. They get away with it, but the sterling reputation that once made Cliff so desirable to Maggie is now tainted, and she refuses to be with him unless they come clean. As he predicted, Maggie is fired, but she can't live without delivering the mail, so she decides to move to Canada to work for the Canadian Post Office. She asks Cliff to come with her, and he very nearly does, willing to throw everything away for the woman he loves. But at the last minute, the Cheers gang appeals to his sense of honor and patriotism to get him to stay. All right, that was the A plot, and certainly the B plot that we'll talk about deals more with musical cues to arouse somebody. But before we get to that, Tim, what did you think about this episode?
This is really a very fun episode. It's not necessarily the top Cliff episode, not really. But it has two major things that make it very much a Cliff episode. We have the unlucky at love storyline tied in with the Postal Service. They haven't had that particular wrinkle on his love stories before. Well, with the exception of taking Diane to the award ceremony.
Right.
That was kind of postal adjacent. It didn't quite fit in the same way this one does. But this one is, you know, it mixes his romantic interest with his professional life and identity.
Yeah.
And the actress who plays Margaret just sells it. I mean, she is great in this part and adorable as she's portrayed as this character. Her outfits and just her mannerisms, everything. She's just adorable. So I really dig this episode.
Yeah. Margaret O'Keefe is played by the actress Annie Golden, whose first appearance was actually in Hair. She's got tons of TV appearances like throughout the years. And spoiler alert, this is not her last and only appearance on Cheers. She will be back. But most recently, a lot of people might recognize her. She was one of the regular characters on Orange is the New Black for a couple of seasons. She's also been in several episodes of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. So, she's fantastic. Yeah.
And I don't know if you've looked at as many images of her recently from Orange is the New Black. I mean, I didn't watch the show. I'm going to admit to it. But seeing the images there, it's like, yeah, she's kind of grown into a grandmotherly kind of look, mm-hmm. or a matronly kind mm-hmm. of look, mm-hmm. which you can totally see from here. But, yeah. you know, she still is like adorable at this age, and you can see her grow into a mature matronly person today. And it's like, still, it's great.
And the funny thing is, like, I did watch that show for a little while, and I recognized mm-hmm. her, but couldn't for the life of me think of where I recognized her from. I couldn't project far enough back. I was trying to think of her mm-hmm. the way she looks now. I'm like, what else have I seen her in? And it was like after like right. years when I finally made the connection, I was like, oh yeah, that was Maggie.
Right.
So But yeah, I like
her. She probably has a similar voice still today, but it's like it still would be really hard.
And she doesn't talk in the show. But yeah. I like the way you kind of characterized it because yeah, like this one really it's always fun when we get an outsider's perspective of Cliff as the mailman from other mail carriers. Like whether mm-hmm. it was guys like talking about like what a joke he is or like Cheers' regular mail carrier Twitchell and everything and how they have this like kind of crazy like vendetta rivalry against each other with Ian Cliff. and now here's Maggie when she tells Cliff and we'll get into this, but like basically says that she requested that he train her because she wanted to learn from the best. And you see like her fanaticism to this and everything and what she mm-hmm. sees in him as a guy, and Carl is just like, my God, there's two of them. And then to see how that spirals into the area in which Cliff excels or seems to be an expert and the area in which he is anything but an expert in his love life, and to see the collision of those two is really cool. For the teaser for this one, it's not great, but there is something of note about this teaser that I'll come to. But Rebecca comes out of her office and presents Sam with an award and a plaque for Employee of the Month. Sam does not want this award. He basically hates it. He thinks it's beneath him. It's kind of demeaning. And he says, I refuse to accept this, and please don't put my picture up. I hate when you do this. And she's like, okay, fine. She's like, Carla, how did she phrase it? She's like, you haven't been mean to anybody in the last couple of hours. She's like, how about you accept that? And she's like, yeah, get real. And she's like, Carla rejects it too. And with no sense of enthusiasm or anything, Rebecca's just like, okay, Woody, you're Employee of the Month. And Woody's like, wow, 4 months in a row. He's taking this seriously. And you're really, oh, yeah, he's just like the third place champion. But and he claims that he doesn't have a speech or anything prepared and then launches directly into one. He's like, you know, I wasn't expecting this, but an achievement like this isn't just my work. It is a team effort and everything. And promptly as he starts to give a speech, Norm and three other bar patrons sitting at the bar near Norm, I have heard this all before and they're tired, so they just get up and start walking away. And that's when we cut to the main credits.
There's also a bar patron woman on the front who's got her back to the audience, and she gets up and moves away too. So it's like, yeah.
What is of note, though, is that the three guys next to Norm who are in the shot who all kind of get up and leave, those three guys mm-hmm. are actually played by longtime writers and producers of the show, David Angel, Peter Casey, and David Lee. And this was their farewell to Cheers. They actually gave them on-screen parts as a going away because after being with the show for years and years at this point, they left to go create the show Wings. And then later on, after Cheers was over, they created Frasier. And they did actually come back to write at least one episode in the final season of Cheers. But this was them, their kind of their exit. So it was cool that, the Charles Brothers and James Burroughs gave them a little on-screen send-off by having them sit there at the bar and then get up and leave.
Yeah, I did see that when I was doing my research for the show, and I was like, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
That is just a nice thing. And what better forum? Cheers can let you do that. You can just be someone sitting at the bar.
Right.
That's all you have to do.
Yeah.
It's a great setting and forum to just give people you don't have to do anything. Just get your on-screen appearance, and you can be done.
Right.
And,
right.
Yeah, so that's a lovely touch. And so that was just wonderful. And because, you know, they've written so many great episodes of the show, it's great that they gave them that moment.
Right. And I mean, like, at this point on the show for years now, Rhea Perlman's dad has been an extra in the background of the show. He plays Phil, the old part. And once we lose Al, Phil actually becomes kind of a semi-regular, getting some lines of dialogue from time to time. But at first, he's just Rhea Perlman's dad, just sitting in the background of certain shots almost every episode. But
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah.
When we come back from the credits, Sam is storming out of Rebecca's office in mid-shout at her. And he's totally fed up with hitting on her all the time. He's like, he says he doesn't even know how many times he's hit on her. And Carla's like, 4,659. Sam is like, well, thank you. He's like, but no more. He's like, I'm tired of being rejected. He goes, I'm going to get my self-respect back starting right now. Whew, that feels damn good. I'll tell you. It's like it's that easy. He can just will his self-respect back. Oh, man. And the look on Frasier's face.
That was
face.
A very fast turn.
Yeah.
Very fast turn for Sam. Yeah.
Frasier's like, well, you know, before you change your mind, he's like, have you considered, he's like, it's been well documented that every, like, living creature or mammal or something has a sexual trigger connected with one of the five sensory stimuli. And Sam is quick to shout, hold up, put a cap on that self-respect thing. Hold on, or, like, hold that thought. Oh, and Frasier, this is a wonderful little thing where he's talking about the different sensory stimuli that could generate arousal. And he's like, the sound of a surf pounding against the shore, the smell of honeysuckle on a warm summer night, the taste of a vintage Chateauneuf-Pape, fire-red fingernails dancing through your chest hair, a black lace teddy straining against its fleshy cargo. And he's just lost, and his voice getting deeper and deeper as he's like not just spewing random hypotheticals. And Sam snaps his fingers like, Frasier, snap out of it, man. And Frasier just goes, in a minute, Sam. he's like, let me stay in here.
Yeah, and that's what's really great how Kelsey Grammer plays this. He does get wistfully. He's no longer describing, as you said, hypotheticals. He's just, without even acknowledging that there's a world around him, just talking through his own thoughts. He's just saying the things out loud. Yeah. And this is also a fun thing about the character Frasier, is that after he says, in a minute, Sam, he laughs to himself about the situation.
Yes.
With Sam.
Yeah.
He can do that. He can kind of make fun of himself a bit more than the other characters can.
Yeah.
He can be aware enough of the fact that, yeah, I was being ridiculous.
yeah, you're right, yeah. Frasier could do that. I think in some situations Norm could do that, but yeah, probably most of the other characters couldn't, but yeah. Then we get Cliff entering, and he is distraught. He says, some days you wake up and you gotta ask, why me? And Norm is like, Cliffy, it's just a haircut, it'll grow back. And Cliff explains that he has been saddled with the job of breaking in a new postal employee. And he said he told his supervisor to send the greenhorn down here to Cheers, which is great. It's just like, everybody knows at this point.
A nice official setting for that, yeah, by the way.
Because like, I got to train somebody, send them to the bar that I spend all of my free time at.
Or even not free time. I mean,
right?
Maybe he should be on deliveries right now if this is when the other employee is working.
Like, probably,
you know.
And Sam is, you know, putting a good face on it. He's like, hey, they made you a trainer. That sounds like a compliment. Sammy, you really are a civilian, aren't you? It's like the one area where civilian. Cliff is confident enough that he can mock Sam. It's like you don't get it. And then the trainee in question arrives, Margaret O'Keefe. As we said, played by Annie Golden, she walks in, she's wearing the same, like, kind of same color postal outfit, except she's got, like, a long, like, shin-length skirt, and she says, hi, Cliff, and he goes, straighten up, O'Keefe, you're in uniform, and she instantly goes to attention in this midget military rigid style. Yeah. Wonderful, like, he's talking to her like a drill sergeant, commanding officer. He's like, I didn't know that you were a woman, and he kind of basically says that he doesn't approve of women postal carriers. He's like, these are very sexist. He's like, they're fine selling stamps or sorting mail, but they're not strong enough to lug a 40-pound bag up the hill with a nor'easter hitting you in the face. And he's like, without going home and soaking your delicates. And she says, I wear cotton briefs, sir, and he kind of blanches at that. He's like, that'll be enough of that, okay.
And you go, yeah, we know this is going to be a setup. We know where this is going to go.
Of course.
Especially with Cliff involved. Like, of course, there's only one direction this is going to go.
Yeah.
But
yes.
It still is fun. Yeah. And even when Margaret comes in, she's got her hair kind of pulled back. Mm-hmm. So you can't see how long it is. All you see are her bangs in the front. It makes her look even more deliberately dressed down, you know, de-emphasizing her looks. to be a postal employee.
Yes.
Yeah. Almost that level thing, too. They really did a good job of just selling her right away. But we get into it more and more as we go along. But they did a good job of making it seem like, yeah, this is someone who's serious about being a postal carrier. But also that letting out the thing about cotton briefs, like, that's a little bit too uncomfortable for Cliff. That's like,
yeah, of course. It's like we're all rich. But, I mean, we get a sense that she's forward, at least in that sense, that she's mm-hmm. not shy about that stuff.
No.
And she also reveals that she requested that Cliff train her because she's heard that he's the best, and she says she wants to be trained by us. She says, I want to learn hard and I want to learn right. She's like, because I love the post office more than life itself. Maggie reveals that her father was a postal carrier and her grandfather was a mail carrier. It's in her blood. And it's been her dream to wear the eagle on her sleeve to be part of the few, the proud. And Carl's like, the undateable. And then Cliff is like,
I don't think that's very fair, but it's
of course, yeah.
It's Carla. Is Carla ever fair? No.
No, of course not.
That's not her job.
Yeah. And Cliff sends Maggie home to get some rest. He's like, tomorrow is TV Guide Day. So that's gonna be the deep end, throwing it right in. So
I don't think that might not be the first TV Guide Day joke they've made in the show. I'm not sure. That'd be a hard one to figure out.
Oh man, they've talked about TV Guide Day. They talked about like the
Sears catalog
and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mother's Day.
When Maggie leaves, Cliff, you're right, because like it does not take long for him to show to reveal exactly mm-hmm. what this episode is going to be about. Because he turns to the guys like, is it just my imagination or was that woman coming on to me? And Norm was like, Cliffy, Walt Disney should have had your imagination.
Which is a great liner. Mm-hmm. That's such a great line in and of itself. But in all fairness, Cliff's not off in this situation.
No.
Devotion to this and her interest in him being the trainer and the phrasing she uses mm-hmm. for how to train her.
Yeah.
It's like, come on. I'm on Cliff's side on this one. That's all I'm saying.
He picked up the right signals. Yeah. So later on, Sam tells Rebecca that he is sorry that she's always cooped up in her office worrying about profits and losses. But Sam and Fraser were having a conversation about sexual stimulus. He doesn't know the plural form of stimulus. He's like, he just asked point blank, do you have one of those? Like, do you have one?
Do you have one of those?
And her response is fantastic. She's like, I am driven to a sexual frenzy by people who mind their own business. So good.
It's delightful. Yeah. She has a way of delivering those deadpan, sarcastic remarks that is just on a par with everybody else in the cast.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something special because she gets to do it to Sam.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, that one's just a winner. That line is just another winner, right? Already off the bat.
And the next thing she says is also really, really good, because she says to Sam that she'll give him a hint, and he's like, you will? Why? And she goes, because you'll never get it. And I mean that in every sense of the word.
You just love that. You have to love how much delight she had in saying it that way, too.
And she goes, it's a song. It's one tiny little song that turned her knees to butter when she was a kid and still does. And she's like, go ahead, try and figure it out. Name that tune. Which is a nice little homage. And she goes to the office, and Sam is really excited. He's like, all I have to do is figure out what song. How many songs can there be?
Oh, Sam. Yeah. So do we think that's an indication of the dumbing down of Sam, or is that just has this been what Sam would have said all along, even in season one?
In the situation, if this is like the first sign of hope that he's gotten from Rebecca or from the object of his desire mm-hmm. in so long, this might have been something he would have said anyway, but yeah. And then we cut to some amount of time later, and he is looking through boxes of old 45s, just going, trying to figure out what's on.
Oh, yeah.
And Rebecca comes out of the office with the legend. She asks Norm, she's like, it's time for you to pay your bar tab. And he's like, me? I just paid it last month.
I want to give that exchange just a little bit more credit, because she comes out, she says it's time to pay your tab. The first thing Norm says, oh, gee, thanks, Rebecca. As though she's offering to pay the tab. And that's when it's like, no, it's time for you to pay it. And it's like,
he's
like,
I just paid him. Yeah, he's, I just paid it last month. Yeah.
He sounds so innocent when he says it.
He's like, this isn't fair.
It's like, obviously I paid it last month. Yeah. It seems like it's someone else's turn. I mean, isn't that how it works?
He's like, I covered the check the last time we went out. And then,
you convinced everybody to split it evenly, and you had the lobster, and everybody else had the chips.
Yeah,
is that the tab you're talking about?
Yeah.
Oh my.
So she heads back to her office. Sam follows her, singing songs from his collection, and he sings bars from the song "Blue on Blue," written by Burt Bacharach and Hal David, which was recorded by Bobby Vinton, which I don't think came up in the Burt Bacharach episode that I did of Fire and Water Records with Sean Myers.
Oh, nice.
The song "Cherish" by The Association and "Inagata De Vida." Mm-hmm. By Iron Butterfly. And when he sings "Inagata De Vida," Rebecca stops. She's like, "Yes, Sam, I'm insane. That's the song that turns me on."
He's trying really hard. Mm-hmm. He really is trying hard. But it's his choice of that last one, the choice there. I have seen... Oh, that's right. It was an episode of The Simpsons where Bart...
turns that into a church hymn choir. Yeah. When he rewrites it in the Garden of Eden.
He swaps in the music from that song onto the organist.
The organist starts playing.
The organist
playing.
Just plays it.
The whole 14-minute version, and then dies after the solo.
Right. And members of the congregation are holding up lighters and everything by the time it's done. The thing that ties into this, though, is Homer saying to Marge, "Remember when we used to make out to this hymn?" So it's not as nutso of a choice as you might think. It's part of them, though, that you gotta already be in the mood before you play the song, not use it to get in the mood.
Right.
That's my take. I won't judge. Hey, anybody out there who has butter knees from that song, more power to you. No shame. No shame.
Yeah. Frasier, on the other hand, goes the opposite direction from Iron Butterfly and suggests that Sam try a song from the opera La Boheme, and he says it can be almost achingly poignant, and it does turn Lilith into a cheap tramp. So, I think in consecutive episodes now, because the episode before this maybe, Lilith revealed one of Frasier's particular kinks about regressing to his childhood and her calling him mommy.
And now Frasier is
revealing this little nugget about Lilith. So.
They're psychiatrists. They treat all these things very clinically. To a degree.
Yeah.
To a point.
Yeah. And then Cliff suggests, like, how could you forget the obvious? The Ballad of the Green Beret. originally sung by Staff Sergeant Barry Sadler. And Woody mentions, he's like, oh yeah, I love that song. And he starts to sing the first bar of that. And Carl is like, in honor of that song, why don't you put on a beret, go outside, and sit on a landmine?
Now, it is funny about that particular choice of song is that, yeah, it's really a great song for, I think, Cliff specifically in terms of – as opposed to the other songs that are part of the armed forces. I was a little bit familiar with them from having done them at our local theater. We actually did a showcase of several little comedy skits based on military humor, and we sang all four of the forces' songs at the end there.
Okay.
I gotta say, my favorite of the bunch of them is the Navy song, "Anchors Away."
Okay.
I really like "Anchors Away." It's really a good song, but also it's kind of a tough one to sing. So I think that's another choice they might make for this show: is the Ballad of Green Berets is relatively easy to sing. So
yeah.
I think helps quite a bit. But since it's like for Army Special Forces, that kind of ties into Cliff's own elevated sense of himself as a postman, and also what level postman he is. He's not just a postman. He's the best of the best. And we'll let history decide where that actually falls.
Right. It's funny. I always associate that song with this episode because this was the first time I heard the song, obviously. The song came out in 1966. So in the middle of Vietnam, the song was coming out, portraying the military in a very glamorous, heroic light at a time when that wasn't perhaps the popular perception of the military. And yet, despite that, the song was number one on Billboard for 5 straight weeks. It ended up selling almost 10 million copies, a little bit less, I think. Maybe over time it has. And the funny thing is, it's a damn catchy song. Like, the melody is, achingly simple. It's, really, really simple. Yeah. You're right. It's not a difficult song. It's very simple, but it's there's something about it. Just the notes that it hits, the melody. It's easy, but it's catchy, and it kind of lives on you. So I've always had this. I have a fondness for the song because of my association with this episode. But I could also just listen to it and it's a fun song.
So you'll be rebroadcasting this episode on Fire and Water Music, right?
Yeah, that's the connection. The songs of Cheers, yeah.
There you go.
Then Maggie comes back to meet Cliff at Cheers. Cliff is telling the guys, yeah, she's a natural. And then she apologizing for screwing up that day. She missed an entire apartment building. And Norm was it's typical male. That never changes. Yeah.
The tradition continues.
Cliff is sure that she will graduate with ease after the recommendation that he gave her. And she reaches over the table and kisses him. And it's not a terribly romantic kiss. It's forward, obviously, of work colleagues. Mm-hmm. But he kind of passes that off. It's almost a platonic thing. He doesn't go overboard with that. And then he gives her a gift, this nice kind of graduation present from mentor to mentee and everything like that. It's really kind of special. It's in a box with wrapping and a bow and everything. And she opens it up and arch supports.
And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful moment.
With no hint of irony, he goes, I got a large size. I noticed you had a pretty hefty pair of dogs down there.
So first off, Cliff has got a Cliff, because he's going to. But also, Margaret had no sense of sarcasm in her delight at seeing that they were arch supports.
This is a perfectly acceptable and special gift for her. And he was really thinking about her benefit and her welfare. Yeah.
Right. Absolutely.
And here she confesses that she really likes him and she wants to be closer to him. And he's just oh, that's no problem. And he just grabs the armrest of her chair and just pulls her and slides her chair next to him.
Here's Cliff still being very confident. Feeling he knows what's going on.
Yeah. Until...
So, yeah, that's great.
Until she actually puts the ball in his court and she asks if he finds her attractive, and he starts to vigorously nod his head, almost like he's vibrating uncontrollably. And she asks if he wants to be with her, and he even finds a way of turning that up another notch. And then she says that she can come over to his place, but then he stops her at the door. He's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And he has to say, he's like, last month my ma came over to the visit, and she got to know the neighbors pretty well, and I don't want word getting back to her that her son does a bad thing.
Oh, yeah, because Cliff still has not cut those apron strings.
No,
that
though
is
he,
not happening anytime soon.
Even though he lives alone, he can't have a woman at his apartment. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty bad. Also, Ratzenberger's nodding. It's like his eyes are clamped shut. His mouth is almost flexed harder than you can imagine. It's like he's going to grind his teeth or clip. So, and it's like just sort of shaking. It's like, oh, it is amazing.
It's so good.
I want to point out, though, that when Margaret leaves, they go to the door together. They kiss. And she does this thing where she opens the door behind her and then just turns and spins right out the door, and it was so smooth. And to counteract the smoothness, Cliff leans in as she's leaving and hits his head on the door.
The door slams him in the head.
There's some excellent subtle physical things even in this little episode.
Yeah, her exit is very graceful, and he literally bangs his head on the door. Yeah. So, they meet at the sleazy motel. He has a bottle of champagne, which is great because when you hear the twist off cap, the studio audience, I think, loses it. And when Maggie comes over and she's like, "Oh, I like this room," and he's like, "Yeah, it's got a great view," and she looks out the window and she's like, "Oh, the ice machine."
It's like you think of everything. No sense of irony or sarcasm in it at all.
Yeah.
She is on Cliff's wavelength so strong.
Yeah. And she says, "I know this is an awkward moment. Couldn't we just get past it?" And something we have never seen from Cliff, he just picks her up and throws her onto the bed. Oh. And almost mounts her, starts to kiss her, and it's like, "Oh, go, Cliff."
Oh, goodness.
Like, we've never seen this. And then there was the knock at the door.
That was shocking. It was shocking, but not in a bad way, just a fun way.
Yeah.
And it's like, whoa!
And then there's the knock at the door. And Cliff starts, he's like, "Yes?" And it's like, "It's the police." And, whew, Cliff says, "My first time," and I get arrested.
Now, I've been trying to do the math, though. Does that really add up from Cliff's previous relationships?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, Cheers did this from time to time. They had contradictions. Their continuity was held up in some really interesting ways. But they also had, you know, things that were completely, like, the state of life and death of Frasier's parents is kind of a joke. But
there's
all sorts of stuff going on and stuff like that. And I think we're definitely meant to infer that he is a virgin at this point, but I don't think we can really rely on that, because I don't think that holds up. It could just be that the first time he takes a woman to a motel like this, you know, just for
that,
sex or something.
That could be. And I think from Cliff's previous relationships, you could argue that nothing happened between the two of them, though they were really very much attracted to each other.
Right.
Most of them don't really get into outside of them as a social couple or dating situation, like the Halloween costume thing.
Right.
We don't really get to see what happens after.
Right.
The woman who comes to watch Jeopardy with him.
Right, last season. Yeah.
We don't really see them or have it really even explicitly said that they got physical. So it's okay. And do we need to know that? No, we don't really have to know that. It does seem kind of surprising that maybe none of them ended up going further than that.
Right.
So you could make the argument if you really wanted to, perhaps.
Right.
I don't think you can make the argument after this episode, though.
Right.
I think after this episode, it's a done deal.
Oh, yeah.
Cliff is a man.
Yeah, it's clear. And whether he is or not, I don't think that's the point. The point is that he's just awkward to the point of being terrified and just bad around women. Just has no game in that area.
He's probably feeling like, you know, mom's gonna be so disappointed. The cops are coming because I'm about to go to Huggy Town.
Yeah. I don't know. And the police they're asking all the motel guests if they know anything about a postal vehicle in the parking lot that was reported stolen. And it's interesting that Maggie is kind of standing off to the side, kind of covering because she's got the badge on her shoulder, and she had the jacket that they just put on the table, so the cop doesn't notice those things. And Cliff says he doesn't know anything about it, and then once the cop leaves, he asks her if she's crazy, and she mentions that she brought the postal truck to the motel because she was running late, she didn't want him to wait, and Cliff starts to freak. He's like, "They're going to fire you. It's over for you now." And she's like, "Cliff, you've got a cover for me." And he's like, "You put my job on the line?" And he's like, "This is my livelihood. This is my dream." And she pulls her shirt down her arm. She's like, "This is my shoulder." And he's like, "Okay, this is our story."
And you knew it would not take anything more than that for that to change Cliff's mind. Of course.
Of course.
Yeah. No surprise there. I did want to unpack a little bit that in this scene, it is important that Maggie, why am I calling her Maggie? She's always called Margaret.
That's true. I keep calling her Maggie because that's what she's called in future episodes, but it is Margaret.
Oh, okay. Yes. There you go. Yeah. Did change clothes for the hotel. She was not wearing the shirt/blouse and skirt. She was wearing this one-piece jumper. But like you said, it has the postal badge on the side.
Right.
And so it's a dark blue jumper that she's wearing. So she's dressing up. First off, that's dressing up for the postal from her perspective. Very important to note. She wanted to look good for this evening. But yeah, and I really did like how subtle it was that she's standing and leaning against that particular wall, and it is very much giving her the opportunity to hide the badge that's on the shoulder there, on that particular arm. That's great staging, you know?
Back at Cheers, Sam calls Rebecca's mom to find out what her favorite song was in school. And he's excited. He's like, oh, yeah, that's great. Thank you very much. And he hangs up and turns to the gang. He's like, you've lost that loving feeling. And was like, I don't know, Sam. I think I'm just a little tired.
No, Woody. How do you feel about Sam calling Rebecca's mom to try to get info about getting Rebecca into bed? Seriously, I will say, there's a lot of things you can do and we can accept as, you know, Sam as being, you know, you try to do the wrong thing, Sam. That's what's really important. Okay, sure. But this is her mom.
Yeah.
Go into someone's mom. No.
That's true. I didn't even think about that because I was thinking, like, later on in the series, we'll meet Rebecca's sister and Rebecca's dad, but we don't really get a sense of her mom. So I was just kind of surprised, like, oh, Sam is actually talking to her mom at this point. That's what I was thinking. And yeah, I didn't even think about it.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, this is horrible what he's doing. Yeah. Like, that completely slipped my mind, but you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's. I mean, I will give Sam credit in the fact that it's a darned clever way to try to figure this out.
Yeah.
Although her mom probably doesn't really know exactly what that song does to Rebecca, just knows that Rebecca played it on repeat a couple of summers, all summer.
Yeah. Cliff and Maggie come back to the bar, and they beat Maggie's disciplinary hearing by lying that they were beset upon by a group of kids who stole the mail truck and took it for a joyride. And Norm was like, joyride? I've beaten those things on foot. Cliff and Maggie get a glass of bubbly to celebrate their victory, and they don't draw attention to it right away, but if you're watching Margaret, if you're watching her face, she's looking distressed. She's looking like she's not enjoying this. Mm-hmm. Cliff is. He's kind of beaming with the day after glow. Cliff, like, they do a little cheers thing, and he goes, as we say down at the post office, here's looking up your address. But Margaret can't celebrate.
Which is a great line. Another great line. I got want to put it out there. Yeah.
But Margaret can't celebrate after they have dishonored the uniform because she doesn't feel worthy of wearing it. And Cliff, he wants to take her back to the motel. But he's like, well, we'll put this out of her mind. And she is torn by the fact that he is no longer the innocent that she fell for. She's like, Cliff is corrupt, even though that she's the one that corrupted him. She says, we're both dirty on the inside. And Cliff goes, let's go back to the motel. They cater to people like us.
Well, let's also unpack that just for a second. Her perception of Cliff.
Yeah.
Things that are on the record that Cliff has done. He let Norm take the blame for finishing his route because Cliff was sick. Yeah. He tried to use Lewis, the other postal carrier, to fight for him. He ratted out Lewis over a perfume sample, and he fixed up his mom with a rich guy just so he could get rich, just for his own gain. So, Margaret has...
But mail is life for Cliff.
the postal glasses on, I think.
Yeah.
just a little bit of reality there.
Yeah. Again, continuity, a little fuzzy in this one.
Wibbly wobbly.
But she says that she can only be with him if they go back and tell the truth. And she thinks that with his reputation, of course, you just point out some holes in that. But she thinks that he'll just get a slap on the wrist, or they will just get a slap on the wrist because of Cliff's record. Then Sam, he goes over and knocks on Rebecca's door, and she's like, "Who is it?" And he says, "The Righteous Brothers." And we just hear, "Oh, no." Or, "Uh-oh." And he comes in and starts to play the song for her. Now, in the episode, he mentions that the song is "You've Lost That Love and Feeling" by the Righteous Brothers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you watch this show back in February of 1989 when it debuted, the song that he plays on the radio in her office is "You've Lost That Loving Feeling" by the Righteous Brothers. Since then, however, in syndication on the DVD and in like wherever this is streaming, or if you get like if you purchase the digital version of it, the song is changed, which happened a lot. Cheers often did that. They had a song in the episode, and then for syndication or other things, they lost the rights to that song. They had to pay for a cheaper song, and they changed it. This time, they do that again, but this is weird for two reasons. Weird because they actually point out the name of the song that they're referencing, so that kind of makes it difficult to use a different song. The other weird thing is, they use a different Righteous Brothers song, because the song he plays, if you're watching this episode today, is Unchained Melody. I always forget that. Like, I don't even catch that anymore, because like I hear that playing, I'm like, oh yeah, Righteous Brothers, Unchained Melody, this is like, You've Lost That Loving Feeling. And then I have to wait, I was like, no, this isn't, this is the other, their other most famous song.
Right.
It's like, this is Ghost, not Top Gun.
Oh, that's a good call. Thank you for that. Yeah, well, I will admit that when I was watching the episode, and like, yes, I caught on right away, that's not the same song. And I think I've noticed it in my rewatches in previous years, too. So it's like, why are they playing the other song? Why are they playing Unchained Melody? It really does come through. It jumped out at me right away. And I probably did see it when it was aired live back in the day.
Did you see it live yourself?
Now, the thing, though, is that Unchained Melody, we've already seen in Cheers with the dance contest, because that's the song that Carla and
Nick,
thank you, dance to win the contest. And as you said about loose continuity, I think Unchained Melody is the one that comes back
later on with Rebecca
in the rest of the season. Yeah. So it's kind of like a strange thing where they changed it because of the rights, to have the rights to You've Lost a Loving Feeling became a problem. But now retroactively, it's the song it should have been all along. It's weird. It's just strange.
All right, hang on. I gotta do a little mental tabulation here. Let me think about this. We see both Righteous Brothers, the singers. We see them in the show Cheers, although not in the same episode or at the same time.
Right. I didn't want to get too spoilery about it, but you just can't help but if you've seen the series at all, and the series has been around for a long time, it's not hard to run across that this has happened.
Right.
And when the second one shows up, Rebecca's all like, "It's the other Righteous Brother."
Right. Which I think Bill Medley, Bobby Hatfield. Bobby Hatfield is the other one. And I think, in a future episode, season 10, season 9. It's season 9 or season 10. I think it's season 9 now. We actually see Bobby Hatfield sing the song Unchained Melody. Mm-hmm. So they couldn't have changed that song for syndication or for other things. Mm-hmm. They had to pay that song because you can't. You can't dub a different song when you actually see him singing it. So I bet because they already had that song paid for, I bet that's why they use it in this one. And maybe that's why they use it going back to the dance competition with Carla and Nick. I'm not sure if that was the song in the original broadcast. I would have to go back and look at my notes for that episode. That was a couple of years
ago. Well, if it's not, it makes Nick says the name.
Oh,
he says, Floyd.
Okay.
Unchained Melody. And then he stares at Carla. So he says the name in the episode.
Okay. They would have already had the song twice. So they couldn't change those. They had to be using those. So Maybe they were just like, okay, we've already got this song paid for. Let's just use it again. Nobody's going to notice. It is weird, though. It's weird that they have.
It is very weird. Now, another note. Let's go back a second to Margaret and Cliff and Margaret leaving. She says, I don't feel what I felt before. I'm sorry. Cliff says, well, is there any way you can get that feeling back? So Margaret has lost that loving feeling.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Dude, you
when
just
I realized that.
You
realized
earned your paycheck like, for oh, this guest spot.
Ooh, that $1.25 is going to burn a hole in my pocket, too.
That's a good connection. Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I wish they could have used that song then. Why didn't they use that song?
Yes, I know, right? Oh, it's so fun.
Yeah. Anyway, we got to get back into the episode now because it's such
a good part. Yeah.
So Sam is playing the song, and even though it's Unchained Melody that we're hearing, it's supposed to be You've Lost That Loving Feeling, which would have been really popular in those, I guess, in 1989 because, as I mentioned, Top Gun just came out 2 years earlier, and that was really popular. Funny because not with Unchained Melody from Ghost, I don't think Ghost came out until 1990, so it would have been after this episode, I think.
Yeah, 1990.
That's what I thought.
Good job. You're right on top of it.
So Sam is kind of singing. He turns the lights down, and Rebecca is just sitting there, sitting still, hearing the song, trying to ignore him. He kind of pulls her close, tries to dance with her and everything, even like dips her, and she's just going lifeless and everything. And then she starts to kind of like tap at her computer like she's still trying to work. And he just gets so frustrated but doesn't say a word about it. He just kind of leaves her to work, puts the chair back under her so she can tap. And he just sulks out of the office feeling defeated but not blowing up or anything, just like, damn it. And he leaves the song playing.
Rebecca's thing is that she could not be more obvious that she's not interested. And Sam is still going through them, still like trying to think that if I just keep going, it's going to work. It's like, and it's like sad. Even though she hasn't said the word no, this is still pretty much no means no, Sam.
I mean, it's sort of like a thing that she's done before where she stops protesting and she just like plays
just
dead and he's like, you're not really into this, are you? And then that's when he's just like,
well, until I get tired.
Yeah. that's when he gets frustrated and he just has to walk out. But once she's alone, it changes. And she goes to the radio and she turns up the volume and she's standing there with her back to the door and she's listening to the song and she starts to move a little bit and get into it and her hands start running up her chest and everything to her neck and her hair and she starts breathing a little bit heavier and you see the change coming into her and the door opens again. But it's not Sam. Who is it? Who comes in?
Oh, it's Norm.
To and contest to his bar tab. Which the seed was planted earlier in the episode. And he walks in, and he's like, Rebecca, bought this tab. And she spins around and kisses him deeply. And just, he's like almost taken, pushed backwards and everything.
It is hilarious. And also more like, whoa. Wow, that you're like, wow, that's a kiss. It's, oh man.
It's so incredible. And she stops him and she shuts off the radio and she's mortified at herself and Norm is just kind of stunned and he's just like, so yeah, I can pay this anytime you want.
Which was the right answer.
Exactly.
And a very Norm answer.
Yeah.
And any of the other men in the cast, any of the characters, would have taken this as an overture to go further. Norm is the only one who's like, that's enough for me.
Yeah. Because she's like, I'm so sorry. I don't know what got into me. Please apologize to your wife. Apologize to Vera. He's like, are you kidding? After that, Vera should apologize to me. But what I just loved about this is that in this episode, completely separately, Norm and Cliff both get some action. It's like the two guys who are like the most hapless when it comes to love, one by design, They both get some action in this episode. It's like good for those guys. Good for the barflies.
Exactly. Although Norms is kind of like, not. He's married. It's like no. But it's still, it's, you can't. There's something about, and we've talked about this before, I think, about Rebecca and Norm.
They have such an
interesting relationship.
Yes.
They're fun together without there being any of the sexual tension.
this moment notwithstanding, yes. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if, like I said, if Rebecca was having these same kinds of scenes with Cliff, Cliff would naturally be, we'd expect him to be dumb and think he could make more overtures in this regard.
Right.
We've seen Frasier mistakenly think that overtures were coming from.
Yeah.
So,
and Woody has tried to flirt with her. Woody has tried to hook up with her. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So Norm is the only one who actually can maintain a monogamous relationship with Rebecca. And it makes for more interesting interactions between the two of them.
Right.
And funnier when we have something outrageous like this happen.
Yeah.
And so, I love seeing this another layer, another progression of just how the two of them are fun, a fun dynamic.
And they have a good episode together coming up in just a few episodes from now. They have a really funny one.
Yep.
At some time later, Cliff is sitting at the bar feeling depressed because Maggie got fired, basically as he predicted when she first stole the truck. And Cliff got not suspended, but a little bit of a punishment. He's got 6 weeks working the dreaded Zone 19. And they're like, what's Zone 19? He goes, also known as Rottweiler Ridge. It's like,
oh no. So here's the thing. Why do you think Cliff took Maggie's word for it when he's the more experienced postal employee? How this would go?
Wishful thinking?
Very possible. That's definitely possible. I kind of, in that same vein, I would just say that honestly, Cliff was in love this episode.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It was not just a sexual attraction or infatuation. He was falling for her.
Oh, absolutely.
That's how I take that. So that's why. And it's like, I'm not trying to overthink it, but it's like, it's still, when you look at the dynamic of the situation, it's like, why did he trust the rookie? But if he had stayed strictly in mentor trainee relationship, he would have been the one dictating, no, this is what we have to do. And this is how things are going to go. But he let it go the other way because really, it's not like Sam where he was letting his pants do the thinking. He actually, I think, was falling for her.
Yeah.
And that's
no,
why
I think it's tragic for Cliff because it's doomed from so early on, like before they even sleep together, she's committed the original sin that's gonna doom them. But I think we see that when she does come back later on the show, that Maggie's basically the love of his life and the one that he in a more idyllic world, the one he would have been with, just because they were so simpatico on everything. She was the ideal one. She loved the post office as much as she did, and she found him desirable of all people. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's just
right. Yeah.
And then she comes in and she says that after she was fired, she wandered aimlessly. And as she got to the bridge, she actually thought of doing something desperate. And it's like, oh, time out. Is this going to get really dark? No. Like, what was she thinking about when she got to the bridge? And Cliff was like, you don't mean? And she goes, yes, UPS. Now, this joke has always hit a little bit harder for me because my dad was a UPS driver for 32 years and was working at UPS at the time we saw this episode. So this is always that little joke is always kind of created in our minds, this feud between the U.S. Postal Service and UPS. So, just because of this joke.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Yeah. Because then Maggie's like, but why should I settle for something like that? There are other options. And she says that she decides that she's going to go to Canada to work for the Postal Service. And he's like, you're going to Canada? She's like, the mail is the mail. It knows no national boundaries. And she asks Cliff to come with her. And Carla encourages her. She's like, go with her. Go, marry her. But please don't have any children. Carla is the only...
if, Margaret has also changed clothes to civilian clothes, and she's wearing this adorable sweater. Mm-hmm. I'm apparently the fashion note person on this on your show. Yeah. But they really are hyping up how sweet and cute this woman is.
Yeah.
As opposed to someone that might be a Sam. She's a sweet woman who, you know, has a love of the Postal Service. No wonder Cliff fell for her.
Yeah. Carla, and of course, Carla is the only person who encourages him to go, because the other's like, what are you thinking? And he's ready to jump on the chains. He's ready to leave with her. And he gives Normie a goodbye kiss, and he's saying goodbye to Fraser and Sam and everybody. And Norma's like, why can't people keep their lips off me today? And Sam puts it, he's like, you've known this girl for a week. All you've shared is one night in a motel and a huge lie. And Cliff is like, that's enough for me.
That's great. Yeah. Well, and also Cliff, real quick, when he says goodbye to Carla, he says, Carla, I forgive you.
And then,
I love how he slips that in.
As he's chasing Maggie to the door, he's like, hitch up those huskies, Canada, here we come. And the guys are trying to stop him, but he says there's nothing they can do or say that'll change his mind. And then Woody, who is curiously absent from before, comes in from the basement storeroom, and he is singing the Ballad of the Green Beret to himself, kind of humming it. And Cliffy stops when he hears it. And, like, not a sexual stimula, but it definitely pierces something in him. And he stops and he has to listen. And the other guys pick up on it. And they start to hum along with those bars. And they're going along with it and humming to him like a background chorus. And he delivers this little monologue with the patriotic theme behind him. And he's like, I can't leave my country. He's like, my place is here in America. But Maggie has to deliver the mail, so she must leave. It's the tragic love. She's like, but without you, I'll be so cold and alone. Who will keep me warm? And we have talked about Cliff's the lack of irony to any of these statements, and this the perfect punctual one. You'll do fine, Margaret. Women have that extra layer of fat.
Oh. And that's how you know it's true love, because she doesn't get mad about that at all.
From the same guy who thought the best gift he could give her was arch supports. He's like, I swear, when he says that line, there's like a ghost of a smile that crosses Annie Golden's face. It's like there for like half a second, where I think that was the actress, not the character, responding. And she kisses him and she walks out. And then Cliff turns to the guys and they stop humming and start singing the final line. And Cliff picks it up and sings with them. And puts this almost Captain Morgan stance because he's on the stairs and he gets one leg up on a higher stair. So he's got his hand, fists on his hips, elbows out, and one knee up in this heroic, virtuous stance as he sings, but only three win the Green Beret. It's so good.
it's fabulous and heroic and hilarious. It's just so great.
Yeah,
Ratzenberger sells this scene so damn well.
Mm-hmm.
Because once he starts hearing the song, we do get that trigger that we were talking about the whole episode for Rebecca. It's that trigger. It's not the sexual trigger. It's the calling trigger. You know, it's something that tells, that reminds him of who he is and what he needs to do with his life. So it's wonderful to have that tie, that theme across this whole episode. And when this moment happens, it takes him a good 30 seconds to turn to face Maggie. Mm-hmm. And it is just tense. And you know, there's just nothing else to say about it except that he was just like, this moment just gripped him. You know, I don't know what else it is. It just, it gripped him so much, and it looks just great. The way Ratzenberger does it, it sells it so great. So I just love this moment. But then of course there's the flip side where he says to Maggie, after she says, I have to deliver the mail, all he says is, I understand. But the way he said it triggered something in me. Mm. And it's not just get your mind out of the gutter. I was trying to remember where I'd heard Ratzenberger say that before, because that's what it was coming from. It's like, I know I've heard this voice say that. Where's the other place I've heard it? Finally, it came to me. The Abominable Snowman in Monsters Incorporated. After Mike and Sully get banished, they're there. Sully is, distraught because Boo is scared of him now. Yep. And the snowman's trying to cheer them both up while being banished. And he's got the quote, snow cones, unquote, and says, I understand. It's not easy being banished. And it's like, I can't believe I put that association together. But also it's like, there's probably nothing else in common between the two things. It's like one character is, now going off to a frozen wasteland where they might not ever see them again. Oh my gosh, it is the same thing. Because Margaret's going to Canada.
Wow.
My brain is going through strange places there, Ryan. I'm sorry.
Clearly this one, there's some deep-rooted connections in this. For Norm's tab, there were so many scene transitions and jumps ahead in time in this one. And also there were two different occasions where we saw Norm was clearly finishing one beer and starting another one, or moments right. That where a very shallow beer and the next time we see him it's a full one. So for that, Norm actually had 7 beers this episode. Which takes him up to 639 for the series up to this point.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, that's an above average total for a single episode.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. By a couple. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to note on that just real quick that one of the refill moments I really thought was funny, because it's where Carla asks, you really think they rode the carnal carousel? And he says, I think it's possible. If you don't mind, I'd kind of like to forget it. And when he says that, he pushes the empty glass towards Woody for a refill.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was just a great moment there.
Right. For Employee of the Week, I do like to pay off the guests as often as possible, and I really liked Margaret in this episode, but I had to give it to Cliff. As much as adorable as she was, and you pointed out all the stuff going on with Cliff in the last scene, and the way he shakes his head when she asks if he finds her attractive, all the stuff that Cliff did in this one. Yeah, this was a Cliff episode, and he earned it. Margaret was a close runner up, but yeah, this was Cliff for me.
Mm-hmm. I have to agree. I was in the same boat. Although I also have to give props to Rebecca for the scene with the song is playing, because she is going from completely uninterested when Sam is in the room to enraptured and lost in this song, exploding into her kiss on Norm. So that the way she plays that is, just like, oh my, I get the vapors myself looking at her play it. So it's a great moment. But yeah, it's, that's the thing. Really, 3 great performances in this episode. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing. It's hard to choose because they're all great. Yeah. I think it's Cliff's episode's got to go there. But yeah, Margaret held her own. It was wonderful to have her on the episode.
The runner up for my home run, which I thought this was going to be my highlight for the episode, it's Rebecca kissing Norm. And all of the build up to that, and then how shocking and surprising it is, and how out of left field, and then just the payoff with the dialogue when he the fact that he jokes about it, and you're right, how he's just like, all right, I'll pay the bill, I guess. Yeah, I'll pay the tab. And everything about that was so good, and I thought that was going to be my home run, but that ends up just being my runner up, because I still think to this day, the best line in this episode is, you'll be fine, Margaret. Women have that extra layer of fat. Just some matter of fact it is. That's supposed to be a consolation.
Oh my goodness. We're close, because that was also one of my considerations. That was probably the third one on me. My runner-up was also Rebecca kissing Norm. Although it's also worth noting that after Norm leaves that room, Woody asks, how'd it go? And he's like, better than expected, Woody. I won't say anything else. But my favorite, I just think because it's a clever bit of writing, is when Cliff says, well, as we say down at the post office, here's looking up your address.
That's good.
That's just so funny. I'm sorry. I just find that one so funny.
Yeah. All right. Well, that will put an end to this episode. Listeners, a quick programming heads up. The next episode that we cover on this podcast will be the episode called Golden Boyd. That is Season 7, Episode 13. Now, if you're watching along on Paramount Plus, I think, or the digital copy that's available on Apple TV / iTunes, I am told that the episodes are out of order. So make sure that the next one you watch, if you're watching along with the show, the next one you watch is Golden Boyd, because that is the next one that I will be covering with Tim's podcasting partner, AJ Wright, next week. So,
woo! Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah. Speaking of that, Timmy, where else can people find you if they want to hear more from you in the podcastosphere?
Oh, sure. Well, you all can find me on the Right On Network with my show, The Outcasters, a Batman and the Outsiders podcast, which I record with my partner in crime, AJ, and also his show, The Batgirl Cassandra Cain podcast. And I also appear on a couple other shows periodically over there. He recently had me on a few special episodes of his Doctor Who shows called State of Temporal Grace, where we covered the Zygon modern appearances in Doctor Who. And you can find me about other things. I've actually also been on Al Sedano's podcast recently for some episodes in JL April. We're talking nice. Angel and the Ape. We're talking about the original formula, Angel and the Ape, the first appearance. So good stuff there. And I've also been on our buddy Billy D's Monsters and Magazines recently, where we covered House of Secrets number 103. It's like, I'm just doing stuff. I'm doing stuff.
Crashing pods. That's what you do.
Yeah, that's what I do. I crash all over the place. All these things are just crashing and burning all over, all over the place.
All right. Well, good to hear from you again. And until next season, when we have you back. Thanks again. And thanks to all of you listeners out there who follow Cheerscast and support the show by liking and sharing on social media and leaving comments on the website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon. Cheerscast is supported by the Right On Podcast Network and Jeff and Rick Presents Unpacking the Power of Power Pack. Go to patreon.com/FW Podcast to support your favorite show on the Fire and Water Network. Thanks everyone for listening, and until next time, we're closed.
Back at home, a young wife waits. Her green beret has met his fate. He has died for those oppressed, leaving her this last request. Put silver wings on my son's chest. Make him one of America's best. He'll be a man they'll test one day. Have him win.